Parashat Lech Lecha. We are introduced with Avraham Avinu for the first time. In the beginning of our parashah, God speaks to Avraham at the age of 75 years old and tells him, Lech Lecha, go to the land that I will show you, La'arez asher ar'eka ve'a'escha le'goy gadol. God says, I will make you a great nation. You have to keep in mind at that point Avraham did not have children, and therefore he's being promised that he's going to have a progeny. Now, Avraham being 75 years old, when did he have his first child from Sarah? I should say his only child from Sarah. He was 100 years old when Yitzhak Avinu was born. Could be God was alluding to him right when he said, Lech Lecha. The gematria of the words Lech Lecha is 100. Lech is 50 and Lecha is 50. So God was, so to speak, telling Avraham Avinu, Lech Lecha, when you reach the age of 100, then already these berachot will kick in. Furthermore, the Baal HaTurim gives an allusion on the gematria of Lech Lecha and says that Avraham Avinu lived a total of 175 years. And therefore, God was telling Avraham at the age of 75, Lech Lecha, you have another 100 ahead of you in order to live. The Zohar has a novel interpretation on this pasuk over here of Lech Lecha. The Zohar learns that this pasuk is alluding to what God tells every soul when it begins its mission on a daily basis going from the heavens to the earth. Lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimolatecha u'mibet abicha. The Zohar says that the birthplace of the neshama is the heavens. And every day, God gives a directive to the soul. Lech lecha me'artzecha. You're going to have to leave your eretz, leave the land of Gan Eden, which is above, u'mimolatecha, and your birthplace, which is ta'at kisei kavod, u'mibet abicha, from your father's house, which is God, and go to the land that I'm going to show you, meaning go down to earth. So the Zohar says that in that directive of the neshama going down, God says, Lech Lecha, make sure you take 100 keys with you. Because the doors that you're going to have to open, and those doors, if you open them, they will be the source of all the blessing that will come down to you. And what are those 100 keys? 100 berachot. The Zohar says, Lech Lecha, that the God tells the neshama every day, don't forget to make the 100 blessings. And every time you make another blessing with kavanah, it creates a door and unlocks it. And now already the beracha is able to come down to the person. Hence we have to be very careful to take advantage of the mea berachot. It's interesting, out of all the things that God tells the neshama before it goes down, it chooses to tell it, Lech Lecha, don't forget the 100 berachot that one must make every day. Comes the great rabbi called the Al-Sheikh and says that the order of the first pasuk seemingly is out of order. Why? When you tell a person to leave, first he leaves his father's house, and then you leave your birthplace, and then only after that you would leave your land. Why then does the pasuk tell Avraham Avinu it reverse? Lech lecha me'artzecha, your land, u'mimolatecha, your birthplace, u'mibet abicha. It should have said bet abicha, then it should have said molatecha, and then me'artzecha. When you leave a town, you leave your father's house, then you leave your birthplace. Assuming a guy was born in New York, yeah? So a guy leaves his house, which his father is, then he leaves New York, then he leaves the United States. So you go in that order. Here it tells him, leave the country first, then leave your birthplace, then leave your father's house. It's reversed. So the Al-Sheikh says over here a very, very important insight. He says, God was not only telling Avraham Avinu to remove himself physically from these places, but God also was speaking to Avraham in the spiritual sense. Which means he was telling him, you have to leave all the traces of your youth and everything you saw, all the idolatry and all the paganism and all the negative environment that you were in, Avraham Lech Lecha. You're going to have to put that behind you now. You're going to have to totally erase all that negative negativism that you saw, then you're going to have to go forward to Eretz Yisrael. How, when a person wants to separate himself from his past, the most difficult thing to separate from, obviously, is from your father's home. Because there, the influence is the strongest. It's less strong in your birthplace, and less strong in your country. So therefore, God is telling Avraham Avinu, separate yourself first from the easy, from the culture of your country. After you separate from that, then separate yourself from your birthplace. That's the subculture. And then the most difficult, Bibet Abicha, to your father's house, what you saw. Which means, we would say in America has its culture. Right? There's a general culture of the country. Then you have New York has its own subculture. So, for the general American culture, that's the easiest to get rid of any trace. But we live in New York. Obviously, we're more exposed to the culture over here of the city. So therefore, that's more difficult. And even more difficult than that is where you're living. Whatever environment in the house that you come from, and you see it every single day, so that's going to be the most difficult to eradicate. Hence, God tells Abraham, start with removing yourself from the philosophy of your country. Then, get to the level where you're able to remove the opinions and the culture of Molatecha. And most hard, get rid of the environment of Avodah Zarah that was rooted in you when you lived in your father's house. Comes the Hakamim in the Gemara and tell us, God blesses Avraham with three blessings. According to the Zohar, it was actually seven blessings. But the three blessings that we have in this Pasuk, actually it's four, I'll make you a great nation. I will bless you. Your name will become great. And you will be in charge of the blessings. I'm giving you rights to have the ownership of my blessings to bless whoever you want. Let's understand each one of these blessings. Avraham Avinu was now being told that he has to travel. When a person travels, especially in the olden days, of course that limits his ability to be with his wife in order to procreate and have children. God tells Avraham, worry not. The traveling is not going to hurt you. You will still become the father of a great nation. Traveling also limits a person's ability to make money. Which means when a person is in a town, he has a store, he has a business, he's able to do commerce. When a person is on the road in the middle of the desert traveling, where is he going to make money? There's no customers in the middle of the desert. So God tells him, worry not, Avraham. You will be blessed with money. Thirdly, when a person is constantly traveling, he cannot become famous. Because he's a nomad, he's in the middle of the desert. Which means when a person is established in the city, so eventually he earns a reputation. But when a person is constantly traveling in the Midbar, so nobody knows who he is. God says, "Va'agadela shemecha." Do not worry, you will become world-renowned. So the rabbis learned a lesson from over here. Just what you thought you'd lose by doing the will of God, God says, by following my will, you'll get all three things. Meaning if we were to rationalize it, we would say, you know what? It's not worth for me to do this mitzvah, to go out. It's going to affect my family. It's going to affect my wealth. It's going to affect my fame. Therefore, you know what? Stay home. God's teaching us a lesson over here. That when you fulfill the divine law, you don't lose. You can't lose when you follow halakha. A guy might think and say, yeah, if I open on Shabbat, I'm going to lose all my money and stuff like that. Doesn't work like that. The Torah is telling you, if God says this is it, it'll work out for the best. Now, even though temporarily you might not see it, but eventually oil always floats to the top and water always sinks to the bottom. At the end of the day, the berakah of listening to God will bring true positive results. And the opposite from sheker cannot come, from falsehood cannot come goodness. And therefore, Torah is telling you, Avraham could have said, nah, there's too much downside listening to this over here. And he would have stayed home. If he would have stayed home, what would have happened? He would never have had children. He never would have got any money, and he never would have had fame. Because he did something that looked like running away from the blessings, God has many agents to give beracha. God could tell you to do the exact opposite of what we would think to bring the blessing, and the blessing will come precisely from that. And that's a lesson that we learned in the beginning of the parasha. Don't outsmart God. Don't think yourself, if I do this mitzvah, I'm going to lose out. Impossible. If God tells you to do the mitzvah, He's not going to punish you. On the contrary, those people that think by transgressing the law are going to gain, you can't gain. There is no real gain. I say a real gain from transgressing. Eventually it catches up. Eventually the person ends up losing more than he has.
Seems that the person really, you have to feed the natural inclination of people. I thought that the object is to be subservient to God and to subdue our will for Hashem's will. Here he's telling him, don't worry, don't worry, don't worry, you do my will, I'll give you your will also.
So the question really can be asked as follows, my dear Sam. The question can be asked like this. What's the test? And they make such a big deal over here. If God would come to me also and say, listen, I want you to go to an unknown place. Take you, but I guarantee you, you're going to become famous, you're going to become the wealthiest guy, and you're going to have a great family. Phenomenal. You have to be a fool not to go. So Avraham Avinu picks up and goes, and what does the rabbi tell us? Oh, what a tzaddik. He listens to the divine will. He goes. Who wouldn't go? If you don't go, you're a fool. It's not like you have a rabbi blessing you over here where you can say, the rabbi's blessing, sometimes it comes to you. This is God.
Yeah.
God's telling him, this is it. Yeah. So what? Why is this counted as one of Avraham Avinu's tests that he passed? So the Mefarshim explained like this. If you look at Pasuk, Dalit, the answer is right there, blatantly. Vayelech Avraham ka'asher diber elav Hashem, that Avraham went to his mission like God spoke to him. The rabbis learn from here. Why did Avraham ultimately go? Because Hashem said. He didn't go for the perks. And that was the test. What's going to be the ultimate reason that's getting you to go? Which means, very difficult. If I tell you, and I've said this many times, do me a favor, I want you to go to the store, bring me back a coffee, and I have a suitcase of $1 million here. When you come back, I am going to give you this $1 million. And I say, you know what? I want to show it to you. I open it up. I say, look at the bills. I say, I want you to feel them. Smell them. Touch them. They're real. He says, okay, beautiful. The guy runs, he jumps out the window, he comes back, he trips on himself, he gets the coffee, and then he tells me, I want you to know, Rabbi, I didn't do it for $1 million. I did it because I love rabbis, and I want you to know that the $1 million didn't even enter my mind. I was doing it solely because I love Hakamim. Now, what do you tell that guy? Come on, what are you talking about? Once you see the money there, you can't tell me that didn't do it. Which is, you want to tell me it was 50% kavod hachamim, 50%, even that I don't believe you, by the way. I'm telling you it was all the money, and if you mash him over the crow, if the biggest rasha told you to get you the coffee, you do it for $1 million. So therefore, the test is when you're... When you're shown the reward, to block it out and do it, l'shem shamayim, which means Avraham Avinu's greatness was the more God piles on, the more difficult it becomes. Which means when God says you're going to become a father of a great nation, and that's one perk. And he said, not only that, I'm going to give you this. The more he adds, the more difficult for Avraham Avinu it is to say, I'm not doing it for that. Don't say anything more. I'm doing it to l'shem shamayim just because God said. And God's the only one that could know exactly what a person's thinking. We can't make that assessment what's driving a person. But God assessed that Avraham's sole motivation was l'shem shamayim because God said. That's passing a test. Well, you don't let the perks motivate you. Now, there's an interesting pasuk in the Tehillim. The pasuk says in the Tehillim like this. David HaMelech is talking. David says, "Hanehemadim mizahav umipaz rav umtukim middevash venofet sufim, gam avdecha nizhar bahim." David HaMelech says, "God, your Torah, nehemadim mizahav, it is more pleasurable than gold, umipaz rav, and from a great, great wealth. Umtukim, your Torah is so sweet, God." Middevash, it is sweeter than honey. Venofet sufim. Nofet sufim is the sap from the tree, which is very, very sweet. That's like the concentrate. So after David HaMelech gives his whole assessment of what he thinks Torah is, he says, you know what? Gam abdecha nizhar bahim. And therefore, I am also careful in keeping the Torah. So the rabbis ask me, you're also? As if to say, like, what are you also? It should say, because of that, I am certainly an observant Jew, which means David HaMelech, you know the value. When David HaMelech saw Torah, he saw gold bullion in front of him. When he saw Torah, he saw sugar, he saw candy, he saw sweetness. David HaMelech, it's not that he believed in Olam Haba. He saw it. He understood that Olam Haba, when he was learning Torah, he said, this is a payout. This is they're giving me Zahav. They have bullion. Boom, they're dropping bricks of bullion. So you know what the explanation they say over here, what David was saying? Even though that's what I see when I learn, Gam avdecha nizhar bahem, I also keep the Torah, meaning as if that doesn't exist. Now for us to say that doesn't make a big deal because we don't see it in front of us. So for us to say we serve Lashem Shamayim, because when we're learning Torah, we don't see a suitcase $1 million in front of us. And God said, you're going to get that. So it's easy for them, Lashem Shamayim. But David HaMelech, when he learned, he saw 10 suitcases of $1 million in front of him. And he said, I am careful in this as if I don't know, it doesn't affect me. I'm doing it solely to give Nahat Ruach pleasure to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Gam avdecha nizhar bahem. Your servant is also careful, meaning also careful like the next guy that doesn't know the value. And therefore, you see, that's a very, very hard test. Now, there's another explanation that I once heard from the former chief rabbi of Israel, Hacham Eliyahu Bakshidoron, Shem Yarich Yamam Batov, will say it in his name. If you look in the beginning of our Amidah, the Amidah starts off Elohe Abraham, Elohe Yitzchak, Elohe Yaakov, and then the Beracha ends Baruch Ata Hashem, Baget Abraham. So, somebody might ask a question: how did the rabbis know to start the first Beracha, the Amidah, mentioning our forefathers? I said this yesterday in the ladies' class. I said, our forefathers? The ladies said, no, the three fathers. Okay. She's correcting me. I said, okay. Some lady from Halab, she's saying, no, how come three fathers? I said, no, we say in English forefathers. I mean, three fathers. No, three fathers. She did it 8 times. No, three fathers. I don't know, we say forefathers. She's three fathers. Okay, forget about it. So now, you'll hear it on the tape. It's all back and forth. Yeah. I said, why does the beginning of Amidah mention our forefathers? She said, no, three fathers. I know, in English. No, in any event, no, she won. I backed off. I said, forget about it. I said, you're right. I'm wrong. I made a mistake. So now, which is, how did the rabbis don't include them? So actually, it's alluded to in this berachah that God gives Abraham. And as she says, והגדלה שמך זה שאומרים אלוהי יעקב יכול יהיו חותמים בכולם. Do you think that at the end of the beracha you're going to say Baruch Ata Hashem again Abraham Yitzchak ויעקב? No. תמוד במר והיה ברכה בך יהיו חותמים ולא בהם. It means the חתימה of the beracha is in you, meaning in your name, meaning Abraham, and not in them. So there's an allusion. Each beracha was already telling us how to pray the first beracha, the Amidah. That you will be mentioned, your son will be mentioned, your grandson will be mentioned, but the beracha is going to be Magen Abraham. So the rabbi explained like this. Each one of the avot represented a different trait. Abraham represents chesed. Yitzhak represents prayer. He actually represents sacrifice, because he was a sacrifice, but there is no sacrifice today, so our prayers are instead of sacrifice. And Yaakov represents Torah. The Tin Emet Yaakov. After Yaakov Abinu, he learned in yeshiva for 77 years. meaning he was 63 years old when he graduated the yeshiva of Yaakov Abinu, and then he went to the yeshiva of Shem Va'Eved for an additional 40 years. Not like some guy that goes to, you know, some yeshiva program for 6 months and comes back with a simicha, like, you know, so he gets like a crackerjack simicha, and he comes along here because he learned 6 months. This is Yaakov Abinu spent 77 years in the yeshiva. So he's Torah, he's emet. Teten emet, Yaakov emet is Torah. So listen to a beautiful explanation. Let's analyze our generation compared to previous generations in respect to our prayers. Our generation undoubtedly has much nicer synagogues maybe than previous generations. If you look at the design, the architecture, that's not to say. I mean, there's some beautiful synagogues of yesteryear. They have museums that show you all the beautiful synagogues. I have a book in my office of all the beautiful synagogues of yesteryear. But there's no doubt in grandeur, in beauty, in comfortability, all our synagogues have cushioned chairs, all our synagogues have central air conditioning, have central heating, have carpeting, have marbles. Our synagogues, even our summer synagogues, or our vacation synagogues, are even more luxurious than some all-year-round synagogues of generations ago, even generations today. But the prayers that take place in those synagogues, can we compare them to the prayers of the generations past? The noise level, the politicking, the lack of concentration, the lack of respect to the synagogue. Although aesthetically the synagogue has advanced, but from the prayer standpoint, our great-grandmothers had more kavanah when they would stand by the window and they would open the blinds and put their hands up to God and say, Bono Shel Olam, please Hashem, Allah, please help me. The heartfelt prayers, unfortunately, of our generation cannot compare. If a guy can make it through the Amidah with kavanah in the first beracha, already he's considered a Hasidah Kadisha. In the first beracha, it's hard just to keep your mind focused on the words. One rabbi said, after somebody finished the Amidah, he came to me and says, Baruch Abba. I said, Baruch Abba. I didn't go anywhere. He says, yeah, in the Amidah, you were all over. You went to Hong Kong, and you went back, you reviewed your honeymoon, and then you went to vacation. You went around the world and back. He says, you have to say Gomel after the Amidah. So another rabbi said, it says in the Pasuk, Ele Barechev ve'ele Basusim v'anachno v'shem v'shem v'enu naskir. Ele Barechev, when the Goyim want to travel, how do they travel? Barechev, they take a car. Ve'en this, they take a sus, they take a horse. V'anachno, how do we travel? V'shem v'shem naskir. We mention God's name, yes, we're off. That's it, take off. We mention Amidah, kalas now. We're ready. We're traveling. So therefore, our prayers, unfortunately, are nowhere near the prayers of our ancestors. So, it's very hard to come to God and say we want Mashiach. And what's zichut? You tefilot? You tefilot? You regressed. You think you're tefilot, you're going to get your Mashiach. Don't even mention tefilot as bringing the Mashiach, because it's not like it was. So you say, okay, the zichut is going to be our Torah. That's going to bring us to Mashiach. Now analyze. Today we probably have more yeshivot in Klal Yisrael and more kolelim than any other time in its history besides Hizkiyah Melech. Every block, we have another kolel and another institution, and there's people learning. And in Israel, just look at the shilichim that come, that they inundate us with their organizations. And Yirbu Kemotam Yisrael, it's beautiful. Lakewood Yeshiva alone, 4,000 students. Ponovich, 2,000, 3,000 students. The Mir, 1,000 students. I mean, you're talking about, you know, like Volozhin, the big yeshivas of the old. Today you have triple what they had in the olden days. So you say, okay, must be in Torah, we have a higher level of scholarship. But then you say, have we produced a Hafez Chaim? Have we produced the likings of a Ben Ish Chai? Have we produced a Chacham Ezra'ati Yala Vashon? Which means we have a lot of quantity going into the yeshivot. But nobody will argue that the caliber and the level, for whatever reason, I'm not giving the psychoanalysis of why it's happening, but the level of Torah scholarship obviously falls far from the mark of even just last generation. All the more so, the previous that with all the learning, we don't have that caliber. Yes, we have great Talmidei Chachamim, don't get me wrong. We have Chachamim that are superb geniuses, Geonim. And they'll tell you, can't compare this to the previous generation. So again, we see when it comes to Torah, what is that?
Like a dog licking the ocean.
A dog licking the ocean, like we said in the Shiur. So when it comes to Torah scholarship, we've also regressed. But there's one area in Klal Yisrael where we might be able to be arrogant and bold and say we have outdone our ancestors. And that is in Chesed, in benevolence, in charity, in kindness. Just think about the magnitude of the Chesed that's done in our generation and how much Chesed is generated in the different ways on a commercial level. In the olden days, they didn't have the wherewithal to create an organization that's going to deliver 3,000 meals a day. A guy did chesed in the olden days. You went to your neighbor, you took some eggs and some bread, and you took him some glass of juice. That was a great chesed. But the wherewithal to make an organization that's feeding hundreds of families and sending packages every Shabbat, or providing housing for the needy. The organizations that exist today in Klal Yisrael are amazing. Which is, it took chesed and commercialized it into a wholesale business. We have thousands and thousands of poundage of old clothes being given out to the anim on a daily basis. Where did you have chesed like that? Which in the old days got an old suit. They went to, a needy guy has old suit, b'chavod. But here it became so organized chesed, where it could be done on a mass scale, where it could be done on a major wholesale level to impact many people, and the chesed is being done on every level, on every capacity. Not only food, not only clothing, not only mental counseling and all that other type of stuff. But what about the innovative chesed that's happening in our generation? If you remember when we went to Hakam Baruch Alav Shalom to his last son's wedding, the doctor, if you remember when we walked in, you saw outside a van. The van had a big satellite on top of it. It looked like a CNN truck. Mm. And what were they doing? The Hakam, unfortunately, wasn't able to be at that wedding. He was cooped up in a hospital bed in Cleveland. So what they did was they provided him a live hookup of the wedding where he could sit from his hospital bed and hear the whole wedding, and they could interact with him via satellite as if he's there. So I asked the guy, who provides this? There's a certain organization that provides live video for free. They bought the van, they bought the technology, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and what do? Every night they go from simcha to simcha in order that the members that cannot be there, to let them be part of the action. You tell me, were our grandparents able to do this chesed? They didn't have the technology, it didn't exist, they didn't have the wherewithal to do such. Now, that's a chesed of the highest measure. Could you put a price on a father that's dying in a hospital bed, that you now gave him the chance to be at his final son's wedding, and he can interact and talk, and he hears, and it's a priceless chesed. What could you put on? There's no dollar price you could put on that level of chesed. And there's hundreds of different innovative type of chesedim that are being done by people all over the world to enhance people's lives. Recently, Lakewood put out a list of all the gamachs. Gamachs are free loan societies. They don't only loan money, interest free, but they lend goods, which is today you can go and borrow for free anything from medicine. Medicine gamach. He has all the medicines. You can't afford to go to the pharmacy to fill a prescription. You call the guy, I need amoxicillin, 10-day prescription. I got it. There you go. Take it. There you go. Which means, you need to borrow a tablecloth because you're making a sabbath. Guy wants to buy a tablecloth now. You go.
I have it in my house. We have hats.
Many hats.
We have a hat bar now at my house, like 1,000 hats. And when he's getting married, come and get a girl, you know.
Yeah, the tiara that they wear, whatever.
The woman's hats, you know.
For the wedding.
Amazing.
Hey, we're just talking. That was my money. But that's a free loan. That's chesed.
People think I'm nuts. How many hats do your wife have?
Uniforms for school. Wedding gowns. It's an amazing thing. I know myself. My wife started a gamach a few years ago in a business. She sells beds. She says, you know what? I was calling her for cots. She started a cot gamach. She bought 5 cots. You cannot imagine how much traffic you have from this cot gamach. Guy says, Rabbi, I'm having a cousin staying over. Guy wants to buy a bed hazid for the weekend. No. Do you have a cot I can borrow? Come on over. Cot gamach, take the cot, borrow it over here. But there's so many people that have these different items that they're lending out for free. One time, when my wife broke her ankle, so it was Shavuot, we needed to move her around. We needed a wheelchair. You look on the list, wheelchair gamach. You call the guy, he's got the wheelchair. Go to his house, he gives you the wheelchair, he gives you the crutches, gives you all the good. What a chesed. You say, this guy's unbelievable. And meanwhile, where does he live, the guy? He doesn't live in a big, gigantic house. The guy lives in a small apartment, and the wheelchair's right there in the middle of the room. Like, you know, so the guy's got to live with this item in his face the whole time. What do you need it for? The guy's not crippled. This is my chesed. I lend out the wheelchair. And the truth is, when we thought about it, with the chesed in the Tanz, we were able to...
Very nice.
It's amazing. Yeah. So the chesed that's being done in Klai Yisrael today, it's better than that. Yeah. That's also good. So there, I like that better also. So now the explanation is like this. In Chesed, it's quite possible to say we have outdone. It's the only thing that went the other way.
Even the auctions, Rabbi.
There you go. How much bake sales? How much charity? How much parlor meetings? 100%. 100%. That's all part of it. And it's keep on going. It's only getting bigger. Baruch Hashem, every year more organizations, every year more ideas, more people are volunteering. It's amazing if you think it's the only thing in our religion that might have gone
advanced.
Everything else you always say, we're not as good. And this you say, I mean, it's arrogant, but we should be inspired, we're better. And therefore the Pasuk says like this, Ve'ereska legoy gadol ze she'omrim Elohe Avraham in the Amida. Ve'abarechecha ze she'omrim ve'elohe Yitzhak. והגדל השמך הזה שאומרים אלוהי יעקב יכול יהיו חותמים בכולם סד רבי בקשי דורון. At the time of the חתימה, at the time of the end of time where Mashiach comes, that's the end of the generation, do you think at the end of time we're going to have all three character traits? Do you think Klal Yisrael is going to excel in chesed, in prayer, and in Torah? Is that going to be the complexion of Klal Yisrael at the end, at the Hatima? Talmud Omar v'heye beracha, becha yehiyu chotmim. At the end of time, at the Hatima, before Mashiach comes, it's going to be becha, it's going to be with chesed. Becha yehiyu chotmim v'lo ba'em. The hallmark of the generation of Mashiach is going to be its chesed. It's kindness, it's charity, and it's good. That is going to usher in the Mashiach. The Hatima will be in Chesed. Sion b'mishpat t'padeh v'shaveha b'staka. And therefore you see over here a very important lesson, that we mustn't lessen our efforts in Chesed. On the contrary, that's the ticket. Mm-hmm. We must redouble our forces and energies in order to think of more ways of doing Chesed on a national scale, on a scale where we're able to impact many Jews by doing them all sorts of kinds, and everybody can get involved in this. I said, you don't have to have an organization. I told you, you sell cots, boom, make a cot come out. You're selling something else in your behead. You sell buildings, so make a building come out. Guy wants to borrow a high rise or something. Guy wants to borrow a condo. You become a condo for a year or two. The point is,
people are getting married.
I need a condo. You got to charge them.
Why don't we give them a reduction? It's nice.
I'll give you direct TV.
And just donate the books.
That's already the answer. Now, There's another chiddush we said yesterday in the ladies' class, which I'm sure you'll be happy that we said it. Look at Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Aleph. This is Rav Pam says this chiddush. It says Vayira Abba Aris. So there was a famine in Eretz Canaan. He went out to Eretz Canaan, Avraham Avinu. When he got there, it was a famine. He said he cannot be effective over here, so he's going to make a U-turn or go to Egypt. Remember the story, boys? Vayira Abba Aris. Vayira Avraham Mislaima Lagurshir Kibadar Abba Aris. Okay? So he went down to Egypt. Now the Pasuk says, after he left Egypt, he became wealthy. It says, "Ulavram eti ba'avrav ha'ilosun bakar hamorim abadim shefachot atarot gemarim." He became wealthy, and he leaves. Beautiful. Perek Yud Gimel. Vayal Avram Mitzrayim. He leaves Mitzrayim. Velot emo. Avram kaved meor. He was very laden. B'mikneh b'kesu b'zahav. Vayelich lemasav. So he goes back to his dwellings. Oh, which is where? Oh, so that she comes and tells us that when he came back from Egypt, you know, back going towards Eretz Israel, so he stayed in the same lodgings that he stayed in when he went down. He was in Canaan, he went down to Egypt. So he had, you know, on the way down, he got to stay in a hotel. So on the way back, Vayelech Lemasa'av, to his lodgings, implied that he stayed in the same hotels going down like when he came back. So that she says, "Well, we need to know that Abraham's itinerary or his accommodation schedule over here. What do I care if he stayed in the same hotel? He stayed in a different hotel. What room number was it? I mean, what are you telling me over here?" So that she tells him, "You learn derech eretz on this. Derech eretz is that when a person is accustomed to staying by a certain host, he shouldn't change the host. Why? Two reasons. Number one, because if he changes." People can get the wrong impression. They might say, "Oh, he probably wasn't happy over there. They probably didn't, take care of him," and that's disparaging against the host. Or they might think, "What kind of tightwad? The host didn't invite him back, so you have to go somewhere else." So therefore, by you not staying in the same place, you're putting the host in a bad position in the eyes of the people. So on the way back, he said, "You know what? The guy took care of me going down. I don't want to stay in the same spot, stay in the same place." And that's why you see a lot of times when these rabbis come from Israel, they always stay in the same place. "Hey, what? Share the wealth. Let them stay by a different house." "No, I stay by Mr. So-and-so." Because, you know, what would happen if a rabbi came and stayed by Mr. So-and-so? The next trip he comes, he stays somewhere else. Right away, people say, "Oh, what happened? I must be, you don't like it over there, because it is. The rabbi unintentionally caused a bad reputation on the host." So the Torah is teaching you Derech Eretz. Comes a Rav Pam and learns yet another lesson. He says like this. He says life, and we know this already, all too well, life is a wheel.
Circle.
It's a circle. The wheel of fortune. And the wheel of fortune constantly is turning. It never stops. People that are on top today are on the bottom. And people that are on the bottom go to the top. If you're on the bottom, you have something to look for. If you're on the top, also about a minan. But which means even the wealthiest of families, the pasuk says, "Kido le'olam chosin." Wealth does not stand forever. Which kido le'olam chosin. Chosin is wealth. It's berachah. Doesn't stand forever. Which means the when the world turns, so the cycle of life, the world is cyclical. So Rav Pam says like this. When a person is enjoying beracha, the nature is he wants to upgrade his lifestyle. He wants to, you know, now he can afford it. So when he couldn't afford it, he was living three times his level that he could afford. Now that he can afford it, he lives 100 times. You know, so it just keeps on going. Another car, another house, another trip, another thing, an apartment, and all sorts of stuff. That's the way nature is. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't calculate that it could turn. And once it turns, now you're stuck. Now you have all these bills, now you have all this pressure, and you have all this anxiety, and you have to pay for it, and how are you going to pay for it? And then, so Rav Pam says, there is a very important lesson in trying to always keep life simple. even when you have, you have to just try to live, not like a pauper, but don't go crazy. Because once you start going crazy, so chas v'shalom, you're going to get used to it. And then if it ever turns, then already you put yourself in a hole. The guy's got credit card bills, all these things. Now he buried himself. And where do you learn this, he says? From Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, what was the difference when he went down to Egypt and when he came back? When he went down, he was poor. So he probably stayed in a Motel 6 going down. Yeah, he couldn't afford it. Where are you going to stay in? The Waldorf? He stayed in a, you know, a cheap hotel. He got a cheap room. Yeah, he's not going to squander. He doesn't have the money. When he came back from Egypt, they said he was wealthy. Now he didn't have to stay in the Days Inn anymore. Now he could have, he could have went to some, posh hotel somewhere in, Canaan and stay, get a suite, get a couple of suites, do some, He kept it simple. He stayed in the same modest place. He didn't want to, he could have went overboard. What he's trying to teach us, don't let the blessing make you crazy. And therefore, he didn't spend an exorbitant amount of money, even though he had it. He can. Now, I'm not talking about what it does to the goyim, and that's a different speech. How it causes them envy and all. I'm talking about over here, just prudent to know exactly when you have it. Still, you have to be a little reserved and not to go crazy in order to chas v'shalom. And furthermore, Rav Palm writes, Avraham made a simple calculation. Well, I'm going to take my money now and waste it on a hotel room over here. I can use this money over here for my chesed operations. I can use it for my... So therefore, the beracha that God gives a person, he has to think in terms of how to take the blessing and use it for eternity. But to take the beracha and now start using it for an extra piece of materialism in Geshmiyut, it's already you're short value, undervalued it. And therefore, he's telling you, Avraham Avinu said, you know what? I'm not staying in this hotel because I'm cheap. That's the unfortunate happens in this community. A guy wants to do something modest. If he's a wealthy guy, they don't say, oh, what a Sadiq, he's living modest. They tell me he's a mooch, the guy. The guy doesn't like to spend money. So it backfires on the guy. The guy wants to live modestly, but they call him a kamsan. In any event, you see over here that Avraham wanted to get value out of his money. He said, I could take this money and instead feed 100 Anim. I can feed 100 poor people. Therefore, I'm not going to. If God gave me the money, I want to get the most value. Use your money wisely. Don't squander it even when you have it. Keep life, says Rav Palm, as simple as you can.